Jackson was an accountant who spent most of his days in the office and most of his nights in front of his computer. Outside of drinks with clients on occasion, he didn't have much of a social life. Jackson was considered average as far as looks went. He wasn't a sharp dresser, and he wore thick prescription frames. Everyone who knew him described him as a nice guy. However, he was socially awkward. The men never invited him to tag along for beers after work, while the women at the office never gave him a second look. Jackson ultimately felt invisible to everyone except his boss. As his direct report, Lane interacted with him on a frequent basis regarding the corporate accounts he was overseeing. He was a good accountant, one of the most thorough the company had, but he wasn't aggressive or ambitious. He did his job and kept his head down. A waste of potential, Lane secretly thought. What no one knew was Jackson had a secret, an ultra personification that scared him. Jackson had been diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder. By definition, this mental disorder is characterized by the existence of at least two distinct and relatively enduring personality states. Jackson had been diagnosed as a child after several incidents where he had acted out and claimed to have no recollection of the events. One incident in particular involved a fellow classmate who was picking on Jackson during recess and somehow ended up with a broken arm after falling from the top of a playscape. The young boy was too afraid to tell what happened, and young Jackson was equally traumatized and couldn't remember a thing. The incidents continued to happen through high school. One day, after a football game, a player on the team was found paralyzed and unable to speak at the bottom of Dead Man's Drop. As the story goes, the player's parents contacted police when he didn't come home after the team's celebration. A search party was formed, and the young football player's car was located on a less-traveled dirt road in the woods. The discovery of his vehicle led authorities to his body at the bottom of the steep hill. Jackson was brought in for formal questioning, as witnesses recall the two teens having a spat in the parking lot of the local diner. Jackson claimed he never saw the brazen teen after the altercation. The town folks all speculated that there was much more to the story. Rumors began to swirl of the teen Lush taking a fall or exiting his vehicle to take a piss, while some felt he was pushed. Without any concrete evidence tying Jackson to the assault, formal charges were never brought. A promising football star would end up wheelchair-bound, unable to feed himself or speak. Again. After graduation, Jackson left the small town and never returned, not even for his parents' funerals. Jackson was an introvert during his college years and managed to get through them without incident. He graduated with a 4-year degree and got a job in the city working as a CPA for a Fortune 500 company. One couldn't tell by looks, but Jackson made good money. He also inherited a substantial amount of money from his parents' life insurance policy that was just sitting and collecting interest because he never touched it. Jackson owned multiple stock options along with the money market accounts. He didn't have to work, but he did so because he enjoyed it. Being at work made him feel normal. Jackson lived alone with his thoughts and a random collection of notes that he would find after awakening from a blackout. He would sometimes awake in strange clothing, and on one occasion, he awoke to find himself covered in blood with a note that read, "Sorry for the mess, bro." He didn't know what happened, but he knew it couldn't be anything good. Jackson had always known about the other boy inside of his head. The two personalities would take turns sharing the light, as they described it. When one personality had control of the light or was awake, the other personality was left in the dark or asleep. According to the psychiatrist, the other boy identified himself as Jackson's protector. He called himself Frank. He was overly aggressive and the complete opposite of Jackson. He was just as intelligent, with a more confident and outgoing persona. The psychiatrist noted that Frank repeatedly expressed a kill or be killed mantra when describing his view of the world. He never admitted to actually killing anyone, but the doctor felt he was hiding a pretty dark side. Unfortunately, Jackson graduated high school and disappeared before the doctor was able to confirm his theory. Frank liked nice things. He had his own wardrobe and jewelry that he kept in a storage unit unbeknownst to Jackson. He also had his own money. Years earlier, he had taken some money from one of Jackson's accounts and invested it. After making a 300% return on investments, he put Jackson's money back without him ever noticing. From that point, he kept investing and flipping the returns. Frank was sitting on 8 figures and Jackson had no idea. He kept thousands of dollars of cash hidden throughout Jackson's loft, along with a suitcase full of cash among his things in storage. Frank was charismatic and somewhat manipulative. The office holiday party was approaching and Jackson dreaded attending every year. Drunken assholes peddling addictions and trying to force their vices on him, all in an attempt to get him to act out of character. The extravagant office event was a battlefield for Jackson, full of traps. His boss expected him and the rest of their team to be in attendance. This year, Jackson felt would be no different from those previous, but he didn't want to disappoint Lane, so he agreed to attend. The evening before the party, Jackson felt incredibly anxious. He had put together an ensemble that was nothing amazing, and he hung it on his closet door. After showering, he attempted to shave and accidentally cut himself. Jackson couldn't stomach the sight of blood and immediately threw up in the sink. After gathering himself, he went into the kitchen to get a glass of water and his anxiety medication. He felt lightheaded, and that is the last thing he remembers. Frank entered the bathroom to clean up the blood that Jackson had left in the sink. Wearing nothing but a towel, he walked into the bedroom to take a look in the mirror. He hated what Jackson had done to their hair lately. It was long and unkempt. He obviously hadn't found his way to the barber yet, Frank thought as he rolled his eyes. He left Jackson the name and number of a barber on a post-it and stuck it to the mirror. He was, however, appreciative that Jackson maintained their physique that Frank worked so hard for. He knew Jackson hadn't put in any real effort. It was only due to the stomach issues he experienced from anxiety that resulted in a regular loss of appetite. Frank, however, made up for it by eating steak and potatoes in various forms, along with dessert every chance he got. Tonight, he planned to have a burger with all the fixings and a side of truffle fries. He didn't want them getting too thin, he thought as he examined their 8-pack of abs and firm backside. He made his way over to Jackson's closet, where he found the monstrosity of an outfit he had displayed on the door. He grabbed a tracksuit and headed to the parking garage. Frank had his own parking space, bought and paid without Jackson's knowledge. Parking spot number 107 housed a black-on-black, fully loaded Audi R8. Jackson had admired the vehicle in passing on several occasions. He fantasized about driving a car that fancy, but he convinced himself that it wouldn't suit him well. Frank sped away from the loft in the direction of his storage facility. Once at the storage, he collected all the things he would need for a successful evening and left. His next stop was for food and then back to the loft to get dressed. He stood in the mirror, scraping away the stains of Jackson's coffee habit from their teeth. Then, he gave them a proper haircut and a face trim. Frank even cleaned up their eyebrows, shaking his head as he plucked them to their separate perfection. After showering, he molded his hair into a slick back style where his curls met in the back of his head. Frank carefully removed his tailored suit from the garment bag. His clothing fit him like a glove. He accented his suit with an expensive timepiece and a coordinating belt and shoe combination. He decided to skip the tie and allow for a few buttons on his shirt to go undone. For the final touch, he sprayed on some expensive cologne, giving himself a final once-over in the mirror. He approved what he saw and headed for the car. He arrived to the holiday party an hour late and planned on leaving early. He could think of much more interesting things to do, but he wanted to keep Jackson's promise to his boss, Lane. Both Jackson and Frank found Lane attractive. However, Jackson was too nervous to ever attempt to make a move on such a powerful woman. Frank, however, had beautiful women throwing themselves at him on a regular basis. This was their third annual holiday party, and Frank was making his first appearance on Jackson's behalf. When Frank arrived, a valet attendant walked up.
Sweet ride. I mean, welcome, sir.
The young kid corrected himself. Frank tossed him the keys and warned.
Not a scratch. You hear me?
The kid nodded nervously in agreeance. Frank climbed the red carpeted stairs leading into the event space. Once inside, he scanned the ballroom for every bar and exit. There were two main bars and cocktail waiters and waitresses walking throughout the tables and crowd. Frank headed towards the bar with plenty of eyes on him. He could hear the nearby chatter. I think that's the VP's son.
I've never seen him. I hope he's psycho.
I think that's one of the guys from the 70th floor.
En route to the bar, he crossed paths with Lane, who didn't recognize him at first glance. Offering her a subtle grin and a head nod of respect, he continued past her to the bar. When he reached his destination, he signaled for the bartender, who came immediately. Frank ordered, keeping his eyes on the bartender as she prepared his drink just right. She placed the drink on the bar and slowly slid it in his direction, careful not to spill a drop. He offered her a half smile for her cute delivery and took a sip. Satisfied with her mixology and performance, he tossed a $20 bill on the bar and turned to observe the crowd. Just then, a very tipsy woman he recognized as one of Jackson's co-workers approached him flirtatiously. Her forwardness was a huge turnoff, and besides, she was a bitch to Jackson at the office.
Buy a girl a drink? She leaned into Frank.
It's an open bar, and you appear to have had enough.
He replied, refusing to make eye contact. She stepped closer, pressing her fake boobs against his free arm.
I've got a deep throat, if you're interested, she offered.
Frank looked her square in the eyes and shot back.
I'm not.
Then turned and walked away. He found a comfortable spot free of the crowd with a full view of the room. He didn't notice Lane at first, standing a few feet away. Also, people watching. "That's a good look on you," she called out, capturing his attention. Frank turned in her direction, recognizing her voice. Lane was 35 years old, with the skin and body of a 20-year-old. She had long hair that was currently swept up into a bun. Her makeup was flawless and not too heavy. She still looked like herself. Her dress was floor length and backless, with a high slit exposing just enough skin to remain elegant. There was something regal about the way she carried herself. Frank approached to acknowledge her comment.
"What's a good look?"
Lane didn't recognize this voice as belonging to the Jackson she knew. "Your confidence," she informed him. Frank smirked, knowing exactly what she meant. Lane took inventory of this new look and demeanor. She didn't want to admit it, but she found it incredibly attractive. Frank signaled for a cocktail waitress and ordered them both a drink. Lane was impressed that he paid attention and knew what she liked. Really, it was Jackson who knew everything about Lane, because he was secretly in love with her, and Frank was the only person who knew it. Jackson had written about Lane in his life journal, and Frank would occasionally read it. He saw that Jackson made special notations when it came to Lane, one being her drink of choice that he noticed over the past 3 years at social work functions when he would be forced to attend. And with that, Frank and Lane made a cheers to another year of success for the company. Lane's curiosity was piqued by Jackson's new look and persona. So far, he was making eye contact, he hadn't tripped up on his words, and he didn't appear shy or uncomfortable. He was like a totally different person. Frank knew Lane had always been nice to Jackson. She even stood up for him once when the office bully tried to embarrass him in a board meeting. Frank indulged her intrigue without telling her too much.
"I took my medication,"
he joked, and they both laughed. He cleverly eluded, and Lane didn't press the issue. Instead, she asked him to dance. Frank set their glasses on the table and extended his hand toward her. She gladly accepted. Out on the dance floor, Frank pulled Lane in close, and thus their tango began. With the back of his hand, he gently caressed her face, trailing down her shoulder and her arm until their hands met in a firm grasp. Frank stepped in and Lane stepped back in suit. Their bodies were close and their dance moves were so passionate that they demanded the eyes of everyone in sight. Frank kept his eyes concentrated on Lane as their bodies intertwined with each step, twirling Lane free on occasion, only to pull her back in close. Frank and Lane were making love on the dance floor. At the song's commencement, Frank was cuffing Lane's leg at a 90-degree angle at his side, completely exposing her thigh. Their eyes, chest, and intimate parts were met. The two were so caught up in their moment, they didn't realize the crowd around them until the applause began. Snapping back into reality, the two immediately separated. Lane quickly walked off the dance floor, straight out of the ballroom and into the lobby for some fresh air. She was burning up on her insides. Moments later, Frank approached her from behind.
"Are you all right?"
he inquired. "I'm fine." Lane took a deep breath, turning to face him. She didn't want to look him in the eye, out of fear of exposing her hidden passion. Frank, recognizing that Lane was trying so hard To play it cool, he leaned in gently.
Go and get your things. We're leaving.
Lane, unable to resist his demand, headed to Kochek to retrieve her items. Frank waited for her outside of his car with the door open. He offered his arm and secured her dress train to allow her a comfortable transition into the low seat. He closed the door behind her and raced up the highway to the Waldorf Astoria. Walking side by side as they approached the front desk, Frank ordered a suite paid for in cash. Other patrons looked on as if they were celebrities. The concierge called for the elevator and escorted the couple to their suite. Frank requested a bottle of champagne and a fruit tray. He graciously tipped the man, who excused himself to quickly execute the request. Lane removed her coat and toured the accommodation. The room was more like a condo with a gorgeous city view. I didn't take you for the fancy type, Jackson. You're just full of surprises, she smiled.
Well, you deserve only the best,
he replied. He approached her from behind and placed his arms around her waist. He whispered in her ear how much he enjoyed dancing with her. Frank gently placed a soft kiss on the nape of her neck. The gesture sent chills down her spine. Frank took a pause and excused himself to allow the room service attendant inside to set up. The attendant placed the tray of fruit on a table, along with two bottles of premium champagne and two crystal flutes. The hotel had thrown in some assorted chocolates with a side of whipped cream and chocolate syrup. Frank tipped the man and saw him out the door. Lane connected her phone to the dock and put on a sexy playlist that she normally only listened to when at home alone. Frank poured off two full flutes and garnished each glass with a strawberry. Lane met him center floor for a proper cheers. Releasing their glassware, Frank led Lane into the open living space and slowly unzipped her gown. He kissed her neck as she reached behind to feel his ass. Turning to face him, Lane stepped back to allow Frank time to admire her body. She was wearing only a lace-cut bikini panty. Frank began to undress himself as she watched. He stripped down to his boxer briefs without breaking eye contact with Lane. He motioned for her to come closer. She took the initiative, guiding Frank in a reverse dance onto the sofa. Frank dropped his boxers while Lane slipped out of her panties. Lane was very impressed with his manscaping. With him in a comfortable seated position, Lane straddled Frank and slid her tongue into his mouth. They kissed feverishly as Frank tactfully slid on a condom. Lane complimented his efficiency by sliding her wetness onto his manhood. Moaning as he made his way deeper, she began to ride him, palming her ass as she worked up and down, back and forth. Frank watched as she rode herself into a full climax. Still horny and hard, Frank stood up, securing Lane's legs around his waist. He walked her over to the glass wall overlooking the city and began to motion himself in and out with her back against the cold glass. Lowering her feet to the floor, Frank instructed Lane to bend forward and place both palms on the window. She complied as he pushed himself inside of her from behind. He stroked her slowly at first. Reaching up, Frank released her hair, allowing it to fall down her back. Twisting it around by the handful, he gently pulled her head backward and began to stroke her with greater force. Harder, Lane whined as she threw it back at him. Frank gave her precisely what she asked for. Pounding away to sounds of her moans, Frank let go and came with force. His breathing was deep. He pulled out and removed the condom. Lane took her hands down from her surrendering position. She walked over to the table and grabbed the chocolate syrup and whipped cream. As she headed into the bedroom, she instructed Frank to grab the champagne. He did as he was told. He set the champagne and three condoms on the nightstand. Lane instructed Frank to lie down. She took a spoonful of chocolate syrup and decorated Frank's shaft with it. Adding whipped cream topping to the tip, she began to slowly lick him clean, working her mouth up and down while sucking and massaging with her tongue. Lane made sure not to leave a drop. Frank was very impressed with her skill set. To reward her, Frank took control, climbing on top of Lane, pinning her legs back. Lane was a regular at her local yoga studio. Frank stretched her body in ways she hadn't experienced in quite some time. Lane's legs began to shake, alerting Frank that she was near the point of explosion. He released her legs and slowed down, taking long strokes to allow Lane to feel every inch of him. They both arose to the ultimate orgasm. The moment was silent, as neither party were big on outbursts. They lie there, bodies quivering in ecstasy, as they both drifted off to sleep. The next morning, Lane woke up alone and confused until she noticed a handwritten note on the nightstand that read,
"Lane, last night was great. I'd love to do it again sometime. Please enjoy room service on me. There's some comfortable attire for you arriving to the suite at 8 a.m. The front desk has the details for your transportation. Jay."
"I guess you thought of everything," Lane said to herself as she fell back into the soft pillows on the bed. She decided to make the best of her Sunday morning and order a nice feast for breakfast. On the other side of town, Jackson was waking up in his bed from what felt like the worst hangover ever, rubbing his eyes as he tried to adjust to the light from his exposed windows. He reached onto the nightstand for his watch. It was 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. Jackson sat up to take a look around. He noticed his party ensemble was still hanging neatly on the closet door. The disappointment set in as he realized he had missed the party.
"Lane is going to be so disappointed,"
he thought, as he rustled himself out of bed wearing a pair of boxer briefs he had never seen before. Jackson made his way to the restroom to relieve himself. Walking past the mirror, he stopped to do a double take. Jackson didn't recognize himself. He looked like an Abercrombie model.
"What the hell?"
he mumbled under his breath. Then he noticed the name and number of a barber stuck to the corner of the mirror on a post-it.
"Fucking Frank,"
he declared with an eye roll. When he pulled down his underwear to relieve himself, Jackson shouted,
"Oh, come on, man!"
at the sight of his newly landscaped genitals. Jackson headed into the kitchen to put something on his stomach. That's where he discovered multiple post-it notes on the refrigerator door.
"Last night, we had a great time. We got to know Lane more intimately. Take pride in our appearance. Grow a pair and play it cool at the office tomorrow."
Jackson was infuriated, but he was more curious to know what Frank meant by "we got to know Lane more intimately." His mind raced with the possibilities. He felt the panic attack setting in and began to take deep breaths in an attempt to quickly digress. He didn't want to wake a sleeping Frank to wreak more havoc. Jackson's phone began to ping from social media alerts. The alerts were pictures from last night's party being loaded onto the company's profile page. Jackson grabbed his cell phone from the countertop and began scrolling. The feed began with images of the decorated event space. As he continued to scroll, he saw pictures of his coworkers and folks from different departments. His thumb paused as he came upon a picture of Lane. Jackson was completely enamored by her beauty. He studied every detail of her photo, as he continued to scroll past the boys' club from his department tossing back beers, he suddenly stopped on a picture of Lane and Frank on the dance floor. There was a video tagged underneath, and he apprehensively clicked on it. Jackson sat there anxiously as the video loaded until it began to play. Jackson couldn't believe what he was seeing. Frank was like Casanova, and he had the woman Jackson secretly loved in his grips. He had no idea that Frank knew how to dance. Jackson watched as the couple gracefully motioned around the dance floor, with their bodies intertwining.
"This is so inappropriate,"
he thought, but he couldn't remove his eyes from the screen. The videographer zoomed in just as the dance ended, and he caught a glimpse of their faces. They were staring into one another's eyes like lovers do. Jackson's jealousy was quickly overshadowed when the realization set in that he would be the one reporting for work on Monday morning. All eyes would be on him, and he hoped people wouldn't assume that he and Lane did anything inappropriate. She was too respectable to be reduced to such whispers. Jackson had to admit, Frank looked good out on that dance floor. He decided not to worry about it until Monday. Jackson went through his closet and decided nothing he owned coordinated with his new made-over look. He decided to take a trip to the mall. Jackson had lived in the city for years, and in all of that time, he never once stepped foot inside the mall. A few hours later, he returned home with new pants and blazer combinations, including multiple accessorizing pieces picked out by a personal shopper at Bloomingdale's. Monday morning, Jackson showed up to the office slightly later than his normal arrival time. He wasn't late, but this was the first time in a long time that he wasn't the first to arrive. Walking through the main lobby, he could see the different reactions on people's faces. Some were curiosity, others were attraction with lust in their eyes. This was a nice change for Jackson. He boarded the elevator car. Just before the doors closed, a hand interrupted the transaction. The door slid back open and one of the Boys Club members stepped into the car, followed by Lane. Jackson's heart sank into his stomach and he suddenly felt nauseous. All three passengers exchanged greetings, but Jackson shied away and avoided making eye contact. Lane was cool as a cucumber as usual, but inside, she was on fire. She wanted to jump Jackson's bones at first sight. However, she wasn't very pleased with how he left her alone in that hotel. Even with the gentlemanly gestures he left behind in his footprint, she still felt like a booty call. Meanwhile, the third passenger stood by taking inventory on Jackson, finally inquiring,
"Wait, Jack, is that you under there?"
Jackson bashfully kept his head down.
"Wow, dude, didn't know you had it in you,"
the Boys Club member teased. Lane watched, waiting for Jackson from the night before to emerge. He never did. The elevator bell rang, alerting them to the arrival of their destination. One after another, they exited the elevator and headed to their separate work quarters. Jackson's new appearance caused quite the stir amongst the men and women in the office. The women were especially reactive to Jackson's new look. Lane watched from her corner office as multiple female associates, who never stepped foot anywhere near Jackson's workspace, made it their business to drop off reports personally. Jackson would normally walk around and collect the reports, since everyone normally neglected the duty. That was when he was invisible. That was no longer the case. The Boys Club noticed what a chick magnet Jackson had become, prompting them to extend an invite for beers after work. Jackson graciously declined.
"All right, cool. Next time, buddy,"
they exclaimed on their way to the elevator. Jackson was always the last to leave the office. He was at his desk plugging numbers into the computer when Lane stepped in. Jackson immediately stopped what he was doing and addressed her presence with a nervous,
"Hi."
"Hi yourself," Lane replied. There was a brief moment of silence that Jackson broke to update Lane about a corporate account he found some red flags on. He was going on about the details when she interrupted. "So, about last night?" Jackson immediately interjected.
"About last night? I really enjoyed dancing with you. You're a good dancer."
His voice was shaking. "Is that all you enjoyed?" Lane asked, taking a step forward, picking up a decorative piece from his desk and pretending to be interested in it.
"Everything was pretty great. You looked amazing."
His voice still shaky. "Mm-hmm," Lane responded with an inquisitive look on her face. She was waiting for Jackson to drop the egg. Placing the item back down, Lane walked around to his side of the desk and turned his chair to free his legs from underneath.
What are you doing?"
He barely managed to make out. "You left me all alone in that hotel room. I didn't like that," she said very matter-of-fact as she nibbled on his earlobe.
"Hotel room?"
he asked, confused. Lane ignored his question as she continued sucking on his neck, causing his dick to jump. "Do you want me to stop?" she asked. Jackson's head fell back and his eyes closed. He took a deep breath. And that is the last thing that he remembers.
"No, Lane. I don't."
Lane could recognize the voice of her last evening's lover anywhere. His tone sent chills down her spine once again. She grinned and they began to kiss. Frank pulled her shirt open, exposing her bare breast. He quickly realized she had come into Jackson's office wearing no undergarments and ready to fuck. As she slid downward onto his joystick, they both released a deep sigh. Lane began to grind on him, with both of his hands grasping her ass cheeks. Frank circled her nipple with his tongue before taking it fully into his mouth. He suckled each breast, sending a vibration through her body, causing her to push him deeper inside of her love canal. Frank could feel her G-spot. He was so stimulated by the feel of her insides. He knew she was ready to pop. Securing his hold on her, Frank stood up and placed her backside on the desk. Positioning her legs over each of his shoulders, he began to coast within her wet walls, feeling the pressure of her internal muscles enclosing on him. Frank increased the momentum, thrusting with intensity until Lane's pussy walls began to throb fervently, inciting a powerful orgasm for them both. Frank pulled out and reclaimed his seat as he caught his breath.
"Well, that was inappropriate fun,"
he jokingly said. They both smiled. Lane redressed while Frank watched on as if it were a striptease in reverse. Lane noticed him watching and had to ask, "I'm curious. You seem like two totally different people at times. One minute you're shy and nervous, barely able to make eye contact. Now look at you, confident, aggressive, and fucking the head of your department on top of your office desk. Is it some type of role play thing?" Frank looked her square in the eyes.
"You wouldn't believe me if I told you. So let's just say it's complicated. I'm complicated."
Lane knew he was deflecting. It was obvious there was more to that story. Still not wanting to press the issue too much, she asked another question. "So which is an act? This you or shy you?" Frank sat there looking at Lane and then he calmly answered.
"Neither. Both. All the world is a stage and life is but an act, right? That's the best answer I can give. For now."
Lane was very dissatisfied with that answer, and her facial expression wore her malcontent well. Lane engaged Frank in a short stare down, and then she turned to exit his office. Frank wanted to tell her the truth, but he knew it was too risky for both he and Jackson. He watched her walk out of the door as he sat there quietly in his thoughts. Frank decided to complete the assigned task list on Jackson's computer. When he was done, he straightened Jackson's desk and headed for the exit. He arrived to the corridor to see Lane waiting for the elevator. She refused to make eye contact. He didn't know what to say to her. She clearly had no words for him. So they both stood there quietly, waiting on the car to arrive to their floor. The doors opened and Frank stood aside to allow Lane to enter first. He followed behind her with his head down. Once the car doors closed, Frank dropped his briefcase and took Lane into his arm. Catching her off guard, she dropped everything in her hand. Pressing her back up against the wall, he began kissing her while groping her ass. Lane managed to reach over and activate the emergency stop switch. Suspended 60 stories in air, Frank dropped to his knees, lifted Lane's pencil skirt, and tongue-kissed her lower lips until she peaked. As time went on, the routine of Jackson versus Frank continued, with Frank dominating the light to spend time with Lane more and more. Frank had fallen in love with Lane, and Jackson was extremely jealous. He began doing things to purposely sabotage Frank's relationship with Lane. Frank would later have to explain away his actions. Lane was beginning to grow tired of the merry-go-round. She had fallen in love with Jackson, but she felt alienated from his life. Lane tried to get closer to him, but then he would change up on her. One evening, Frank and Lane were getting ready to watch a movie at her place. They were making out on her couch when the microwave alarm interrupted the session. Lane excused herself into the kitchen to retrieve the movie snacks. When she returned, Jackson had taken control of the light and began questioning why Lane would be so careless to risk her career over someone she barely knew. He was visibly upset and she was so confused. After scolding her, he walked out and slammed the door, leaving her standing there, clutching the fresh bowl of popcorn. The occurrences became more frequent, causing Lane to raise her guard from him. Frank noticed the shift in Lane's behavior towards him, and he was well aware that Jackson was the cause. The two personalities would argue via handwritten notes during their individual time in the light. It was clear Jackson and Frank hated one another. Jackson had reached his breaking point and decided to seek help to get rid of the roommate in his head once and for all. He discovered an alternative psychotherapist on the internet who had allegedly successfully integrated a few patients using hypnosis. His methods were not approved by the American Medical Association, but the testimonials of his patients were enough to convince Jackson it was worth a shot. Jackson had completed the mandatory consultation and therapy sessions ahead of the integration procedure. He managed to do it all with limited time in the light. The evening had come, and Jackson was seated in an observation room in a relaxed high-tech chair. A white coat entered the room and administered a light sedative into his IV. The medication was simply to help him relax, as he would remain conscious throughout the process. A second individual entered the room and placed a pair of virtual reality goggles over his eyes and a monitor on his temples and chest area. There was a brief moment of silent darkness that was interrupted by the sound of the doctor's voice.
Jackson, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
As I've previously explained, I'm going to place you underneath a state of hypnosis. This is going to take you back to your earliest memory of Frank. I want you to take a deep breath as you observe the pendulum swinging under the warm light on your VR screen. Concentrate on it. Can you see it?
Yes, I see it.
Inhale through your nose and exhale out of your mouth. Completely relax. This is a safe space. Jackson, tell me, what do you see?
I'm playing in my room. Wow. I'm 4, maybe 5 years old.
Concentrate on what's happening to you in the moment, what you hear and feel.
I'm arguing with myself in the mirror. I think Frank destroyed my favorite action figure. He left it on the dresser where he knew I'd see it. I'm sad. I'm crying. I throw it away before my parents could find it. I'm going somewhere else.
Breathe through the transitions, Jackson. Just go with it. You may feel jolted or as if you're being in motion, but just remember, you're in an observation room. You're safe.
I'm at school. I can see children playing. It's high. I'm up high. Other kids are playing below. I'm on a playscape. There's another kid up here. I can't quite see his face. He's calling me crazy. He's backing away. Frank must have done something. He's afraid of me and telling me to get back. It's getting dark. I can't see anything.
Remember your breathing. Don't allow yourself to get worked up.
I'm in the principal's office. My parents are here. They're taking me to the police. Mom is crying. She keeps saying, he wouldn't. He's a good boy. My father is upset. They want me to tell my side of the story. They're asking so many questions. I don't feel well. I'm losing the light. It's getting dark. I can't see.
Did you see what happened to the boy?
Frank must have pushed him.
But you didn't actually see it.
No. I just know he did. I'm in the car with my parents. My mother is still crying. My father is asking me, why did I say that to the police? He's saying everyone's gonna think I'm crazy and they're gonna lock me up. But I didn't say anything. I wasn't even there. We're home. My father has a belt in his hand. He's calling me names. He's hitting me all over with the belt. I'm crying on the floor and he's still hitting me. I'm just a kid. My mom runs into the room. They're fighting. I try to help her, but he pushes me and I hit my head. It's dark.
It's okay. Just breathe, Jackson. The lapse in memory could mean you passed out or maybe Frank took the light from you. Keep breathing. Where are you now?
So many places. The memories are moving too fast.
Breathe, Jackson. We're going to make some adjustments on our end to try and slow the pace.
I'm in high school. There's a football game. We've won. Everyone is cheering. I left the field and went to the diner. It's packed with kids from school and folks from the game. The football team and cheerleaders are here. There's a kid from the team, Brad. He's pushing me around. The manager wants us both to leave. I didn't even do anything. No one even cares. Brad and I are arguing in the parking lot. His teammate approaches and pulls him away. I'm walking home. It's dark out. There's not a car in sight on the main road. I just turned onto a dirt road. It's a shortcut through the woods.
You're doing great, Jax.
There's a car coming. It's approaching slow from behind. The headlights, they're blinding me. I can't see.
Jackson shields his eyes until the driver turns off the headlights. The driver's side door opens.
It's Brad. Brad from the football team. He's laughing at me. He's asking how long have I been crazy. He's pushing me. I tripped and fell backwards and I'm bleeding. He's pushing me. He's punching me. I'm curled into a ball on the ground. He's kicking me. It's dark. I can't see. I'm at the police station with my parents. The police are asking me if I hurt Brad. They want to know how I got the cut. I told them I tripped over a rock while walking home in the dark. I don't think they believe me. The surgeon is asking me to go wait in the lobby while he speaks to my parents. I didn't even do anything. I'm in my room. My father, he's so angry. He's beating me. He's drunk. He's always drunk. It's dark again.
Jackson, do you want to take a break?
No. I want to finish this. I see Mom. It's her funeral. I'm here, but I'm not. I don't know how to describe it. This can't be right. I never attended Mom's funeral. I would have remembered. I'm in college now. The images are vague. I don't feel well. College is a blur until senior year. My memories are mostly studying and exams.
Were you social at all? Any friends?
I had a roommate, but we rarely crossed paths. I can't really see his face. Why can't I remember more?
Perhaps those memories weren't significant. Don't get hung up on what you can't remember, Jackson. Let's concentrate on what you can remember.
I got a job offer just before graduation, and I moved to the city.
Jackson went on to describe what he could recall about the actual move, which was very little. The doctor noted each lapse in memory for he and his team to later map out. After moving to the city, Jackson's memories of his life at work are predominantly intact, except random occasions where he describes losing the light for short spells. This is at least consistent until his job's last annual holiday party. The first phase of treatment is complete, and Jackson is sent to a private suite to rest. A couple of hours later, Jackson awoke from a deep sleep feeling well rested. A nurse entered the room to check his vitals. She informed him that the doctor would be by to see him shortly. After documenting the necessary readings from the monitor at his bedside, she offered to open the curtains. Jackson thought this was odd considering it was evening time, but his mouth responded with,
"Sure."
The nurse pressed the button on the nightstand, and the automatic blackout curtains began to lift, allowing in the bright sunlight. Jackson was extremely confused.
"What time is it?"
he demanded. The nurse informed him it was almost 8 o'clock.
"A.M.?"
he asked in shock.
"That would be correct,"
she answered.
"How long have I been out?"
he followed up. The nurse looked confused. She told him she wasn't exactly sure what he meant. Losing his patience, he asked,
"How long have I been asleep?"
She told him, "Approximately 5 hours." She went on to express that she was surprised he was up so early after such a late session the evening before. According to his recollection, that math didn't add up, so he asked a more direct question.
"How long have I been here?"
The nurse looked at him solemnly.
"Frank, you've been here a full week now."
Jackson started to have a panic attack just as the doctor entered the room. Making his way over to his bedside, he coached Jackson through some breathing techniques.
"That's it, Jackson. Just breathe. I need you to stick around for a while so I can explain some things to you."
The doctor informed him through his breathing exercise. Jackson told the doctor he didn't understand why the nurse would tell him he had been there a week now. The doctor invited Jackson to take a walk. Jackson slid on a pair of Crocs from the side of the bed and the two headed outside to walk the courtyard. The doctor asked Jackson what was the last thing he remembered. Jackson described being under hypnosis and the memories he recalled, followed by going to his suite to rest and then waking up to the moment. The doctor asked Jackson to hear him out without interruption, and Jackson agreed.
first, I want you to know the hypnosis treatment was successful. After today, you will be officially an integrated mind, just as you hoped for. It just won't look the way you thought it would. Jackson, our analysis of your memories and observation led my team and I to believe you are not the primary conscience of this body. That means Frank is, and he has been fighting you for the light all this time.
Jackson's facial expression was of pure shock and disbelief as the doctor went on.
Your memories, though many, contain a lot of breaks if you would. Your existence jumps from time to time, leaving gaps that we calculated to last on different occasions, from days to months to even years. However, Frank, whom you've assigned the name conveniently because it is his middle name, can recollect every memory gap you've experienced. The onset of MPD didn't happen until age 5, after Frank was punished severely by his father for wetting the bed. He beat him and locked him in an old cellar under the house for several days while his mother was away. When she returned, she discovered Frank's condition, and instead of calling the police or taking him to the hospital, she covered it up. Understand, she loved her son, but she too had mental issues that went undiagnosed. She did what she thought was best. She quit her job and stayed home with Jackson, or Frank, to protect him from his father. Now, during his time in a cellar, Frank began talking to himself and using his imagination to keep the monsters at bay. With such a delicate mind of a child, Frank snapped from the seclusion, splitting into two subconscious pieces, piece one being Jackson and piece two being Frank. Over time, you became the more dominant personality during different time blocks. At such a young age, it was easy for you to convince yourself that you were the original Jackson, when really, you are Frank. This is why you don't have the original memories he has of first learning how to read or write his name. This is also why you have a different penmanship. From your memories, we were able to construct an actual map of your existence versus Jackson's. I know this is not easy to hear, but I need you to know the facts. I have something from Jackson that he would like for you to read. He has willingly gone back into the dark to allow you this opportunity. It will further explain what was happening during those lapses you experienced. Are you willing to read it?
He looked at the doctor with tears streaming down his face and agreed. The doctor pulled an envelope from his pocket and handed it to Frank. He told him to take all the time he needed, and he would be inside when he was ready. The doctor walked away to give Frank his privacy. Frank wiped the tears from his face with his shirt sleeve and took several deep breaths before opening the letter that read,
"Hey, Frank. It feels odd to actually call you that, and even odder to be sitting here writing you this letter. I want to first thank you for bringing us here behind my back. I've had the opportunity over the last several days to address a lot of demons from my past, the main one being my father. As the good doctor has likely already shared with you, he was the trigger responsible for our condition today. I want to help you understand and complete those missing memories. When we were 5 and I destroyed the action figure, you had the light for days, leaving me in the dark. It was the longest time I had gone without the light, and I was afraid.
Please let me out.
I wanted to tell Mom, but my time to shine was limited. I decided I would leave her a sign, so I destroyed something she knew I held dear to me. My hope was she would see it and instantly know something was wrong. She would know I wasn't me. Instead, you discovered it and threw it away. My young mind never considered how hurt you would feel, nor your reaction to that hurt. I only knew how I felt and that I was trapped. The incident on the playground didn't quite play out how you thought. The boy, Jake, on the playscape wasn't pushed. He jumped out of fear. I managed to take the light from you and I panicked and I told the first person that I saw that I had been trapped inside my own head. Rambling out of fear, I must have scared poor Jake senseless. I saw him getting closer to the edge as he backed away from me. I attempted to grab a hold of him, but it was too late. He had jumped. It was never my intention to hurt anyone. Suddenly, I'm in the principal's office and he's asking along with the police what happened to Jake. I told the truth. I told them I'd been trapped, that there was another boy inside my head and it scared Jake and he jumped. No one believed me. Father beat us and Mom pretty bad that day. I felt responsible for her pain. I began giving you the light to avoid dealing with my emotions just as you would give me the light to deal with the pain and physical abuse. It became a routine defense mechanism. I know there was also some confusion around Brad. He was a bully and we were just his last victims. That night in the woods, I arrived in the light to Brad kicking and punching me. He was actually trying to push me over Dead Man's Drop. That was a steep 40-foot tumble through trees, rocks, and God knows what else. When I realized he was no longer trying to scare me, but actually hurt me, I had to defend myself. When he attempted a final kick at me over the edge, I grabbed a hold of his foot and knocked him off balance. He was pretty drunk, so it wasn't hard to do. We tussled at the edge. I told him to stop repeatedly, but he refused. When he went over, I attempted to grab onto him, just like with Jake, but again, I was too late. I watched his body tumble until I could no longer see him. I thought he was dead, and I knew they would blame me, the crazy kid in town. So I went home, showered, and went to bed like it never happened. He was discovered barely alive the next day. We were summoned to the station for questioning, and you took the light. I awake later to a drunk dad beating the stuffing out of me. Mom died shortly after that incident. Dad blamed me for that as well. The whole town came to her funeral. Most were just there to be nosy. We were pretty secluded people, but those who knew her loved her. She used to be so fun, vibrant, and full of life. Dad was jealous and often said things to diminish her and make her feel insecure. She was always there for me, so I owed it to her to be at her funeral. My determination allowed me to keep the light from you during that time. Once I realized I could hold on to the light, I began to do it more often. College was a blast. I partied while you studied. I drank, tried recreational drugs, and had lots of sex. When I was tired, I would pass the light to you. I discovered that you had been journaling around that time, and that gave me the opportunity to get to know you better. I found myself wishing I was more like you at times. I grew depressed and began spiraling. You took the light and saved me. You saved us. I would reappear from time to time, but after you single-handedly secured that college degree, I felt I owed it to you to stay away. You had earned the career, so I let you have it. Some months ago, I returned home after a night out with blood all over us. In your journal, you described the scene very grotesquely. That too isn't what it appeared to be. I know you think I'm a monster, but I actually discovered a severely wounded kid who was bleeding out in the alley outside of a bodega. I got him to the hospital and took off before the police could question me. I figured it was best not to get involved in some likely gang violence, especially when I didn't witness anything. I just found him that way. I could go on, but I hope you understand that you saved me as a kid as well as an adult. I feel that I wouldn't be where I am today without you. I don't know exactly what integration will look like for us. The good doctor says every patient is different. I am hopeful it will be a nice blend of the both of us. The best parts of me and the best parts of you. Thank you, Frank, for always being my protector. I'll see you on the other side. P.S. I love Lane, and I would never do anything to hurt her. or her reputation. If you agree, I would like to quit the company and pursue a life with her as my wife. Don't worry, I can afford to take some time off for a while. Much love, Jack.